Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcasts currently feature the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Du Hirsu,
with a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening.
The writer of Acts, chapter 8, verses 26 through 40, tells us this story. Later, God's angel spoke to Philip. At noon today, I want you to walk over to that desolate road that goes from Jerusalem down to Gaza. He got up and he went. And he met an Ethiopian eunuch coming down the road. The eunuch had been on a pilgrimage to Jerusalem and was returning to Ethiopia, where he was minister in charge of all the finances of Candace, queen of the Ethiopians. He was riding in a chariot and reading the prophet Isaiah. The Spirit told Philip, "Climb into the chariot." Running up alongside, Philip heard the eunuch reading Isaiah and asked, "Do you understand what you're reading?" He answered, "How can I without some help?" and invited Philip into the chariot with him. The passage he was reading was this: "As a sheep led to slaughter, and quiet as a lamb being sheared, he was silent, saying nothing. He was mocked and put down, never got a fair trial. But who now can count his kin, since he's been taken from the earth?" The eunuch said, "Tell me, who is the prophet talking about, himself or some other?" Philip grabbed his chance. Using this passage as his text, he preached Jesus to him. As they continued down the road, they came to a stream of water. The eunuch said, "Here's water. Why can't I be baptized?" He ordered the chariot to stop. They both went down to the water, and Philip baptized him on the spot. When they came up out of the water, the Spirit of God suddenly took Philip off, and that was the last the eunuch saw of him. But he didn't mind. He had what he'd come for and went on down the road as happy as he could be. Philip showed up in Azotus and continued north, preaching the message in all the villages along that route until he arrived in Caesarea.
Dominant readings of this story are often titled "The Conversion of the Ethiopian Eunuch." And these readings celebrate the conversion of this Ethiopian eunuch to following the ways of Jesus. But what if this story points to other, even more radical conversions that we often overlook? See, in the ancient Near East, a eunuch was a man who most often as a child, but sometimes even as an adult, was castrated in order to serve elite women. Despite the fact that these neutered male human beings were castrated in order to serve others, they were also stereotyped at the same time as being sexually immoral. Notice, though, that Philip, this devout religious person, doesn't condemn the eunuch. He doesn't hate the sin, love the sinner. Karen Baker Fletcher writes about it this way. Instead, Philip runs to the eunuch and helps him to understand that the very text that he's reading aloud in Scripture, which was common practice in this era, refers to the one who is shorn or castrated. The reading is from the prophet Isaiah, and it's a book of hope and promise for eunuchs and captives, for the sick and the lame and the outcast. Philip doesn't question or condemn the eunuch's social status or national affiliation or gender or sexual condition. Philip doesn't tell the eunuch that if only he confesses Jesus Christ, receives water baptism, and prays hard, God will give him the gonads and desire for women. So, what if this biblical story models how we, as followers of Jesus, ought to engage with people who don't fit within dominant binary gender norms of our day? What if it isn't just the eunuch that's converted to Jesus in this story? What if Philip is converted by an unexpected guide as he watches over this eunuch in love, saying that the humiliation that others say you should have because of what's happened to your body, well, God doesn't see you that way. That's conversion. That's hope and freedom. What if this story is itself an invitation for all of us to be converted? What if this text encourages us to accept persons who are biologically, sexually different from dominant sociocultural norms? We, like Isaiah, Jesus, Philip, and the eunuch, are affirmed then in this call to share the good news of the God of Israel that's revealed in Jesus without partiality or prejudice, and climb into that chariot. Perhaps this story itself is an unexpected guide for understanding and embracing the complexities of gender identity and gender performance, even now into the 21st century. So this morning on This Christian Life, we're going to look together and hear together stories about biological sex and gender identity as we look to an ancient biblical text as an unexpected guide for faithfully understanding these issues in our day.
Act 1, A Boy. Once there was a boy. He was part of his family. He had two sisters, a brother, a mom, and a dad. The family was happy and active. One day, when the boy was about 8, he was alone at home. He doesn't know why, but on that day, he went into his sister's closet and picked out one of her dresses and put it on. It felt good. So he grabbed a scarf of his mom's and went outside for a short walk. He returned from the walk, happy, but confused. He was also worried. He put everything back so that no one would know what he had done. The boy grew up like many boys do, and he had some challenges in school, but because he was a phenomenal athlete, he made it through. He played baseball and football and ran track. He was the best athlete in the school. The boy loved girls and went on dates and went to parties. And still, on occasions, when he was home alone, he didn't know why, but he would borrow a dress from his sister's closet and a scarf from his mom's and go for a walk. The boy went to college on a football scholarship, full ride. That is how good he was. He made friends. He dated and he majored in physical education. He injured himself, though, playing football and had to switch to track, where he found a brand new way to excel. Now that he was older and had gone on dates and had some friends, he realized something. The feelings that he had that caused him to want to wear a dress and to feel good wearing a dress were still with him. They were in his heart, and they were in his soul. He realized that he felt inside like he was a female. Not at all sure what to do about this, he chose to keep it a complete secret. He chose to wonder about it privately and to try to live his life in the best way he knew how. But often he was very sad, and truly he was very lonely. In college, his new sport became the decathlon, 10 events, and he worked very hard and he got married and he set his goal to be an Olympian. He made the Olympic team twice and won the decathlon gold medal in 1976. He even, in 1976, set a brand new world record. Our whole nation was proud. His family was ecstatic, and he became a celebrity. I think we know now that I'm talking about Bruce Jenner. And this week, many of us were able to hear his story because he allowed himself to be interviewed by Diane Sawyer. Depending on your age, you know Bruce Jenner as an Olympic hero. Or, if you're younger, you know him as a reality television star. Either way, he's been in the public eye for quite some time. He's been married 3 times, has 6 children, and I believe 8 grandchildren overall. He loves them so. Throughout his life, he confided his secret to very few, mostly his wives, who seem to support and love him still. He's 65 years old now. He's done with keeping his secret. And so with grace and gentleness, this man that we have watched from afar allowed us to know who he truly is, a transgender person. It is good to be known. Everyone needs to be known. In describing himself as transgender, he said to Diane Sawyer and to all of us, "I'm me. I'm a person. This is who I am. I'm not stuck in anybody's body. My brain is much more female than male. For all intents and purposes, I am a woman. People look at me differently. They see you as this macho male, but my heart and my soul and everything that I do in life, it is part of me. That female side is part of me. That's who I am. I was not genetically born that way, and that is very hard for me. Why? I don't want to disappoint people." His children do not seem disappointed. They seem tender and they seem loving. His family, including his mother and his big sister, seem tender and loving. And one news person said of the interview, "It was like we were having a conversation in our living rooms that we'd never had before." I wonder this week how many lives Bruce Jenner saved. I wonder how many people will now feel permission to come out to a friend or family member. I wonder how many churches will take this opportunity to talk about being transgender and to remind people that God's love extends to all persons. All means all. Bruce Jenner, an unexpected guide if ever there was.
Act 2, Understanding Terms. The Movement Advancement Project is an independent think tank. It provides research and analysis and insight that helps speed equality for LGBT people. We found the writing helpful this week as we tried to unpack and to understand some of the different terms that were at play. And I found a route to their website through an unexpected guide. It was a link that's connected to the United Methodist Church, and it linked me to the Movement Advancement Project. So even in that, I found an unexpected guide in getting ready for this morning. Transgender Americans, they write, are experiencing a unique moment in history, rising visibility, unprecedented advocacy, and changing public opinions, are working to provide transgender people with greater legal protections than they've ever experienced before. And at the same time, many transgender people, particularly transgender women and transgender people of color, still face enormous barriers to their own safety, their health, and their well-being. The word transgender describes individuals whose sex at birth is different from who they know they are on the inside. At some point in their lives, many transgender people decide that they must live their lives as the gender that they've always known themselves to be, and they transition to living in that gender. Gender identity is a person's deeply felt inner sense of being male or being female or being somewhere in between those. Gender expression is how we live that out, how masculine I come across or how feminine I come across. That's my expression, or it's your expression. And we all have a sense of gender identity and ways that we express our gender. And sometimes, for some of us, those don't align in the way that the world seems to need them to. Note, though, that gender identity and expression are independent of sexual orientation. Independent of them. So transgender people may identify as heterosexual or as gay or as lesbian. And this can become very confounding for some of us to even try to figure out what words to use. As we talk about Bruce Jenner, what pronoun to use. It's woven into our very language. Transgender people, though, experience discrimination because of their gender identity and their gender expression. Actually, because of the ways that we perceive their gender identity and their gender expression. They experience discrimination for that. And sometimes, for some transgender people, they also experience discrimination around their perceived sexual orientation. Act 3, An Honored Guest. Kate Bornstein is an activist and a writer. Her book, My Gender Workbook, turned my world upside down while I was in seminary. She's been an unexpected guide for me and for many. And Kate shares this story at the very beginning of My Gender Workbook. I want to say this pretty early on in this book. Some of this exploration of gender might make you uncomfortable. That's what I hear from a lot of my early readers, and I'm sorry. I really am. It's an uncomfortable subject. I know. I've tried to be as compassionate as I can be about the discomfort that this book is going to cause some people. But as hard as I try to make you comfortable, the real comforting is going to have to come from inside yourself. It's taken me a long time to learn that one, she writes. I had very little compassion for the part of myself that couldn't live up to being either a real man or a real woman. And also little reason to be willing to be compassionate with myself. When I finally started to come to grips with this gender stuff of mine, I ran into the odd position of discovering people who were much more willing than I to simply let me experience my gender quandary. A Catholic priest taught me the value of compassion for myself. I was in Alcoholics Anonymous at the time. I was still a guy and still afraid of dealing with my transgender stuff. I went on a men's retreat to a Catholic monastery. We did all the standard retreat-type workshops and meetings, but the last thing that we each had to do was sit down with the priest and go over our personal issues. The priest assigned to me was an older man. I'm guessing that he was in his 70s, and he was a real nice father-type guy. He asked me, "What is the big issue in my life?" I figured, screw it, I'll tell him. So after about half an hour, I spilled out my transgender story. At the end of my tale, the priest looked at me. Maybe his eyebrows were a little further up on his forehead. And he said, "Well, I am certainly not qualified or experienced enough to give you any specific advice about a sex change. But I can tell you this, your comfort level is somewhere down around your ankles, and you need to do something about that. He went on to tell Kate that she should do at least 3 things a day to make herself more comfortable. And then he said this, "Al, you need to learn to treat yourself like you would treat an honored guest in your house." That was about 12 years ago. And it's still some of the best advice that I've ever received. Whenever I'm beating myself up about gender stuff or anything else, I can usually get back to the point of treating myself like an honored guest.
Act 4, hearing an ancient conversion story again for the first time. Later, God's angel spoke to Philip. At noon today, I want you to make your way to the end of the pride parade that goes down Market Street. He got up and he went. He met a transgender person of color coming down the road. The M to F person had been on a pilgrimage to Sacramento and was returning to the Castro, where she was a domestic worker for a wealthy political dynasty. She was riding with the top down and reading the prophet Isaiah. The Spirit told Philip, "Climb into the convertible." Running up alongside, Philip heard the transgender person of color reading Isaiah and asked, "Do you understand what you're reading?" She answered, "How can I without some help?" and invited Philip into the car with her. The passage she was reading was this: "As a sheep led to slaughter and quiet as a lamb being sheared, he was silent, saying nothing. He was mocked and put down, never got a fair trial. But who now can count his kin since he's been taken from the earth?" The transgender person of color said, "Tell me, who is the prophet talking about, himself or someone else?" Philip grabbed his chance. Using this passage as his text, he preached Jesus to her. As they approached the end of the parade route, they came to a stream, kind of like a city fountain. The transgender person said, "Here's water. Why can't I be baptized?" She slammed the car's brakes. They both got out, walked to the city fountain, and Philip baptized her on the spot on Market Street. When they came up out of the water, the Spirit of God suddenly took Philip off, and that was the last she saw of him. But she didn't mind. She had what she'd come for and went back to Pride as happy as she could be. Philip showed up in Sacramento, continued north, preaching the message in all the suburbs along the route until he arrived in Reno.
Bruce Jenner is an unexpected guide in our day, trying his best to treat himself as he would treat an honored guest in his home. It was an old priest in a little Catholic monastery that reminded Kate Bornstein, a transgender activist whose comfort level was down around her ankles, to treat herself as she would treat an honored guest in her house. The eunuch welcomed Philip into the chariot, seeing Philip as an honored guest. And Philip saw the same when he looked on someone who didn't fit the gender norms of his day and shared God's love in the name of Jesus. May these unexpected guides and this ancient story lead us to God's table, and may this very table remind us that we are all guests, honored guests in God's house. Amen.